Uncle Vanya, Scenes from Country Life in Four Acts, Anton Pavlovich Chekhov. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at threeords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Uncle Vanya, Scenes from Country Life in Four Acts. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: Uncle Vanya, Scenes from Country Life in Four Acts. Author: Anton Pavlovich Chekhov. Release date: May 1, 1999. Ebook 1756. Most recently updated: November 26, 2012. Language: English. Other information and formats: www.gutenberg.org/ebook/1756. Credits: produced by an anonymous volunteer and David Widger. Asterisk: start of the project. GUTENBRGEBOOK Uncle VANYA. SCNES from Country Life in Four Acts. Asterisk: Uncle VANYA, Scenes from Country Life in Four Acts. By Anton Chekhov. Contents: characters, Uncle VANYA. Act I, Act II, Act III, Act IV. Characters: Alexander Esyeriburikoff, a retired professor. Helena, his wife, 27 years old. Sonia, his daughter by a former marriage, MME. Vioitiskaya, widow of a privy counselor and mother of Sarah Brakoff's first wife. Ivan Vianya Vioitiskaya, her son. Michael Astiroff, a doctor. Ilya Wfflestlegin, an impoverished landowner. Marina, an old nurse, a workman. The scene is laid on Esyeriburikoff's country place, Uncle Vianya. ACTI, a country house on a terrace. In front of it, a garden. In an avenue of trees under an old poplar stands a table set for tea with a samovar, etc. Some benches and chairs stand near the table. On one of them is lying a guitar. A hammock is swung near the table. It is 3 o'clock, in the afternoon of a cloudy day. Marina, a quiet, gray-haired, little old woman, is sitting at the table, knitting a stocking. Astrov is walking up and down near her. Marina: pouring some tea into a glass. Take a little tea, my son. Astrov takes the glass from her unwillingly. Somehow I don't seem to want any. Marina: then will you have a little vodka instead? Astrov: no, I don't drink vodka every day, and besides, it is too hot now. A pause. Tell me, nurse, how long have we known each other? Marina: thoughtfully, let me see, how long is it? Lord, help me to remember. You first came here into our parts. Let me think, when was it? Sonia's mother was still alive. It was 2 winters before she died. That was 11 years ago. Thoughtfully, perhaps more. Astrov: have I changed much since then? Marina: oh, yes, you were handsome and young then, and now you are an old man and not handsome anymore. You drink too. Astrov: yes, 10 years have made me another man. And why? Because I am overworked. Nurse: I am on my feet from dawn till dusk. I know no rest. At night I tremble under my blankets for fear of being dragged out to visit someone who is sick. I have toiled without repose or a day's freedom since I have known you. Could I help growing old? And then, existence is tedious anyway. It is a senseless, dirty business, this life, and goes heavily. Everyone about here is silly, and after living with them for 2 or 3 years, one grows silly oneself. It is inevitable. Twisting his mustache, see what a long mustache I have. Grown. A foolish, long mustache. Yes, I am as silly as the rest, nurse. But not as stupid. No, I have not grown stupid. Thank God, my brain is not addled yet, though my feelings have grown numb. I ask nothing, I need nothing, I love no one unless it is yourself alone. He kisses her. Head: I had a nurse just like you when I was a child. Marina: don't you want a bite of something to eat? Astrov: no. During the 3rd week of Lent, I went to the epidemic at Malitskoy. It was eruptive typhoid. The peasants were all lying side by side in their huts, and the calves and pigs were running about the floor, among the sick. Such dirt there was, and smoke. Unspeakable. I slaved among those people all day, not a crumb passed my lips, but when I got home, there was still no rest for me. A switchman was carried in from the railroad. I laid him on the operating table, and he went and died in my arms under chloroform, and then my feelings that should have been deadened awoke again. My conscience tortured me as if I had killed the man. I sat down and closed my eyes, like this, and thought, will our descendants 200 years from now, for whom we are breaking the road, remember to give us a kind word? No, nurse, they will forget. Marina: man is forgetful, but God remembers. Astrov: thank you for that. You have spoken the truth. Enter Vioitiskaya from the house. He has been asleep after dinner and looks rather disheveled. He sits down on the bench and straightens his collar. Voitsky: H-m, yes, a pause, yes, Astrov. Have you been asleep, Voitsky? Yes, very much so. He yawns, ever since the professor and his wife have come, our daily life seems to have jumped the track. I sleep at the wrong time, drink wine, and eat all sorts of messes for luncheon and dinner. It isn't wholesome. Sonia and I used to work together and never had an idle moment, but now Sonia works alone and I only eat and drink and sleep. Something is wrong, Marina. Shaking her head, such a confusion in the house, the professor. Gets up at 12, the samovar is kept boiling all the morning and everything has to wait for him. Before they came, we used to have dinner at 1 o'clock like everybody else, but now we have it at 7. The professor sits up all night writing and reading, and suddenly at 2 o'clock there goes the bell. Heavens, what is that? The professor wants some tea. Wake the servants, light the samovar. Lord, what disorder, Astrov. Will they be here long, Voitsky? 100 years. The professor has decided to make his home. Here, Marina. Look at this now. The samovar has been on the table for 2 hours and they are all out walking, Voitsky. All right, don't get excited. Here they come. Voices are heard approaching. Serebrakoff, Helena, Sonia, and Telegin come in from the depths of the garden, returning from their walk, Serebrakoff. Superb, superb, what beautiful views, Telegin. They are wonderful, Your Excellency, Sonia. Tomorrow we shall go into the woods, shall we, Papa Voitsky? Ladies and gentlemen, tea is ready, Serebrakoff. Won't you please be good enough to send my tea into the library? I still have some work to finish, Sonia. I'm sure you will love the woods. Helena, Serebrakoff, and Sonia go into the house. Telegin sits down at the table beside Marina Voitsky. There goes our learned scholar on a hot, sultry day like this. In his overcoat and galoshes and carrying an umbrella, Astrov. He is trying to take good care of his health, Voitsky. How lovely she is, how lovely. I have never in my life seen a more beautiful woman, Telegin. Do you know, Marina, that as I walk in the fields or in the shady garden, as I look at this table here, my heart swells with unbounded happiness. The weather is enchanting, the birds are singing, we are all living in peace and contentment. What more could the soul desire? Takes a glass of tea. Voitsky. Dreaming, such eyes, a glorious woman, Astrov. Come, Ivan, tell us something, Voitsky. Indolently, what shall I tell you, Astrov? Haven't you any news for us, Voitsky? No, it is all stale. I am just the same as usual, or perhaps worse, because I have become lazy. I don't do anything now but croak, like an old raven. My mother, the old magpie, is still chattering about the emancipation of woman, with one eye on her grave and the other on her learned books, in which she is always looking for the dawn of a new life, Astrov, and the professor, Voitsky. The professor sits in his library from morning till night, as usual, straining the mind, wrinkling the brow. We write, 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 without respite, or hope of praise in the future or now. Poor paper. He ought to write his autobiography. He would make a really splendid subject for a book. Imagine it, the life of a retired professor, as stale as a piece of hardtack, tortured by gout headaches and rheumatism, his liver bursting with jealousy and envy, living on the estate of his first wife, although he hates it because he can't afford to live in town. He is everlastingly whining about his hard lot, though. As a matter of fact, he is extraordinarily lucky. He is the son of a common deacon and has attained the professor's chair, become the son-in-law of a senator, is called Your Excellency, and so on. But I'll tell you something. The man has been writing on art for 25 years, and he doesn't know the very first thing about it. For 25 years, he has been chewing on other men's thoughts about realism, naturalism, and all such foolishness. For 25 years, he has been reading and writing things that clever men have long known and stupid ones are not interested in. For 25 years, he has been making his imaginary mountains out of molehills. And just think of the man's self-conceit and presumption all this time, for 25 years. He has been masquerading in false clothes and has now retired absolutely, unknown to any living soul, and yet see him stalking across the earth like a demigod, Astrov. I believe you envy him. Voitski? Yes, I do. Look at the success he has had with women. Don Juan himself was not more favored. His first wife, who was my sister, was a beautiful, gentle being, as pure as the blue heaven there above us. Noble, great-hearted, with more admirers than he has pupils, and she loved him as only beings of angelic purity can love those who are as pure and beautiful as themselves. His mother-in-law, my mother, adores him to this day, and he still inspires a sort of worshipful awe in her. His second wife is, as you see, a brilliant beauty. She married him in his old age and has surrendered all the glory of her beauty and freedom to him. Why, what for, Astrov? Is she faithful to him, Voitsky? Yes, unfortunately she is, Astrov. Why, unfortunately, Voitski? Because such fidelity is false and unnatural, root and branch. It sounds well, but there is no logic in it. It is thought immoral for a woman to deceive an old husband whom she hates, but quite moral for her to strangle her poor youth in her breast and banish every vital desire from her heart, Telegin. In a tearful voice, Vanya, I don't like to hear you talk so. Listen, Vanya, everyone who betrays husband or wife is faithless and could also betray his country, Voitski. Crossly, turn off the tap, Waffles, Telegin. No, allow me, Vanya. My wife ran away with a lover on the day. After our wedding, because my exterior was unprepossessing, I have never failed in my duty since then. I love her and am true to her to this day. I help her all I can and have given my fortune to educate the daughter of herself and her lover. I have forfeited my happiness, but I have kept my pride. And she? Her youth has fled, her beauty has faded according to the laws of nature, and her lover is dead. What has she kept? Helena and Sonia come in. After them comes Amemi. Voitskaya carrying a book. She sits down and begins to read. Someone hands her a glass of tea, which she drinks without looking up. Sonia. Hurriedly to the nurse, there are some peasants waiting out there. Go and see what they want. I shall pour the tea. Pours out some glasses of tea. Marina goes out. Helena takes a glass and sits drinking in the hammock. Astrov, I have come to see your husband. You wrote me that he had rheumatism and I know not what else, and that he was very ill, but he appears to be as lively as a cricket. Helena. He had a fit of the blues yesterday evening and complained of pains in his legs, but he seems all right again today. Astrov, and I galloped over here 20 miles at breakneck speed. No matter, though, it is not the first time. Once here, however, I am going to stay until tomorrow and at any rate sleep. Quantum satis, Sonia. Oh, splendid. You so seldom spend the night with us. Have you had dinner yet, Astrov? No, Sonia. Good, so you will have it with us. We dine at 7 now. Drinks her tea. This tea is cold, Telegin. Yes, the samovar has grown cold, Helena. Don't mind, Monsieur Ivan, we will drink cold tea then, Telegin. I beg your pardon, my name is not Ivan, but Ilya, ma'am, Ilya, Telegin, or Waffles, as I am sometimes called on account of my pockmarked face. I am Sonia's godfather, and His Excellency, your husband, knows me very well. I now live with you, ma'am, on this estate, and perhaps you will be so good as to notice that I dine with you every day, Sonia. He is our great help, our right-hand man. Tenderly, dear godfather, let me pour you some tea, MME. Voitskaya. Oh, Sonia, what is it, grandmother, MME? Voitskaya. I forgot to tell Alexander, I have lost my memory. I received a letter today from Paul Alexeyevich in Kharkov. He has sent me a new pamphlet, Astrov. Is it interesting, MME? Voitskaya. Yes, but strange. He refutes the very theories which he defended 7 years ago. It is appalling, Voitski. There is nothing appalling about it. Drink your tea, Mama, MME. Voitskaya. It seems you never want to listen to what I have to say. Pardon me, Jean, but you have changed so in the last year that I hardly know you. You used to be a man of settled convictions and had an illuminating personality, Voitski. Oh, yes. I had an illuminating personality which illuminated no one. A pause, I had an illuminating personality. You couldn't say anything more biting. I am 47 years old. Until last year, I endeavored, as you do now, to blind my eyes by your pedantry to the truths of life. But now, oh, if you only knew, if you knew how I lie awake at night, heartsick and angry, to think how stupidly I have wasted my time when I might have been winning from life everything which my old age now forbids. Sonia, Uncle Vanya, how dreary, MME, Voitskaya. To her son you speak as if your former convictions were somehow to blame, but you yourself, not they, were at fault. You have forgotten that a conviction in itself is nothing but a dead letter. You should have done something, Voitski. Done something. Not every man is capable of being a writer perpetuum mobile like your hair, Professor, MME. Voitskaya. What do you mean by that, Sonia? Imploringly, Mother, Uncle Vanya. I entreat you, Voitski. I am silent. I apologize and am silent. A pause. Helena, what a fine day. Not too hot. A pause. Voitski, a fine day to hang oneself. Telegin tunes the guitar. Marina appears near the house, calling the chickens, Marina. Chick, 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 Sonia. What did the peasants want, Nurse Marina? The same old thing, the same old nonsense. Chick, 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 Sonia. Why are you calling the chickens, Marina? The speckled hen has disappeared with her chicks. I am afraid. The crows have got her. Telegin plays a polka. All listen in silence. Enter workman. Workman, is the doctor here? To ASDROFF, excuse me, sir, but I have been sent to fetch you, Astrov. Where are you from, workman? The factory, Astrov. Annoyed, thank you. There is nothing for it then but to go looking around him for his cap. Damn it, this is annoying, Sonia. Yes, it is too bad, really. You must come back to dinner from the factory, Astroff. No, I won't be able to do that. It will be too late. Now where? Where to the workman? Look here, my man, get me a glass of vodka, will you? The workman goes out where Ware finds his cap. One of the characters in Astroff's plays is a man with a long mustache and short wits like me. However, let me bid you goodbye, ladies and gentlemen. To Helena, I should be really delighted if you would come to see me someday with Miss Sonia. My estate is small, but if you are interested in such things, I should like to show you a nursery and seedbed whose like you will not find within 1,000 miles of here. My place is surrounded by government forests. The forester is old and always ailing, so I superintend almost all the work myself. Helena, I have always heard that you were very fond of the woods. Of course, one can do a great deal of good by helping to preserve them, but does not that work interfere with your real calling, Astroff? God alone knows what a man's real calling is, Helena. And do you find it interesting, Astroff? Yes, very, Voitsky. Sarcastically, oh, extremely, Helena. You are still young, not over 36 or 7, I should say, and I suspect that the woods do not interest you as much as you say they do. I should think you would find them monotonous, Sonia. No, the work is thrilling. Dr. Astroff watches over the old woods and sets out new plantations every year, and he has already received a diploma and a bronze medal. If you will listen to what he can tell you, you will agree with him entirely. He says that forests are the ornaments of the earth, that they teach mankind to understand beauty and attune his mind to lofty sentiments. Forests temper a stern climate, and in countries where the climate is milder, less strength is wasted in the battle with nature, and the people are kind and gentle. The inhabitants of such countries are handsome, tractable, sensitive, graceful in speech and gesture. Their philosophy is joyous, art and science blossom among them, their treatment of women is full of exquisite nobility. Voitsky, laughing, bravo, bravo, all that is very pretty, but it is also unconvincing. So my friend to Astroff, you must let me go on, burning firewood in my stoves and building my sheds of planks. Astroff, you can burn peat in your stoves and build your sheds of stone. Oh, I don't object, of course, to cutting wood from necessity, but why destroy the forests? The woods of Russia are trembling under the blows of the axe. Millions of trees have perished. The homes of the wild animals and birds have been desolated. The rivers are shrinking, and many beautiful landscapes are gone forever. And why? Because men are too lazy and stupid to stoop down and pick up their fuel from the ground. To Helena, am I not right, madame? Who but a stupid barbarian could burn so much beauty in his stove and destroy that which he cannot make? Man is endowed with reason and the power to create, so that he may increase that which has been given him, but until now he has not created but demolished. The forests are disappearing, the rivers are running dry, the game is exterminated, the climate is spoiled, and the earth becomes poorer and uglier every day. To Voitski, I read irony in your eye. You do not take what I am saying seriously, and after all, it may very well be nonsense. But when I pass peasant forests that I have preserved from the axe, or hear the rustling of the young plantations set out with my own hands, I feel as if I had had some small share in improving the climate, and that if mankind is happy 1,000 years from now, I will have been a little bit responsible for their happiness. When I plant a little birch tree and then see it budding into young green and swaying in the wind, my heart swells with pride and I seize the workman who is bringing him a glass of vodka on a tray. However he drinks, I must be off. Probably it is all nonsense anyway. Goodbye, he goes toward the house. Sonia takes his arm and goes with him. Sonia, when are you coming to see us again, Astroff? I can't say, Sonia. In a month, Astroff and Sonia go into the house. Helena and Voitski walk over to the terrace. Helena, you have behaved shockingly again. Ivan, what sense was there in teasing your mother and talking about perpetuum mobile, and at breakfast you quarreled with Alexander again? Really, your behavior is too petty, Voitsky. But if I hate him, Helena? You hate Alexander without reason. He is like everyone else and no worse than you are, Voitsky. If you could only see your face, your gestures. Oh, how tedious your life must be, Helena. It is tedious, yes, and dreary. You all abuse my husband and look on me with compassion. You think, poor woman, she is married to an old man. How well I understand your compassion. As Astroff said just now, see how you thoughtlessly destroy the forests so that there will soon be none left. So you also destroy mankind, and soon fidelity and purity and self-sacrifice will have vanished with the woods. Why cannot you look calmly at a woman unless she is yours? Because the doctor was right. You are all possessed by a devil of destruction. You have no mercy on the woods or the birds or on women or on one another, Voitsky. I don't like your philosophy. Helena, that doctor has a sensitive, weary face, an interesting face. Sonia evidently likes him, and she is in love with him, and I can understand it. This is the third time he has been here since I have come, and I have not had a real talk with him yet or made much of him. He thinks I am disagreeable. Do you know, Ivan, the reason you and I are such friends? I think it is because we are both lonely and unfortunate. Yes, unfortunate. Don't look at me in that way. I don't like it, Voitski. How can I look at you otherwise when I love you? You are my joy, my life, and my youth. I know that my chances of being loved in return are infinitely small, do not exist, but I ask nothing of you. Only let me look at you, listen to your voice. Helena. Hush, someone will overhear you. They go toward the house. Voitski. Following her, let me speak to you of my love. Do not drive me away, and this alone will be my greatest happiness. Helena. Ah, this is agony. Telegin strikes the strings of his guitar and plays a polka. Emmy, Voitskaya writes something on the leaves of her pamphlet. The curtain falls. Act II, the dining room of Seri Birikyoff's house. It is night. The tapping of the watchman's rattle is heard in the garden. Seri Birikyoff is dozing in an armchair by an open window, and Helena is sitting beside him, also half asleep. Sarah Brakoff, rousing himself, who is here? Is it you, Sonia, Helena? It is I, Sarah Brakoff. Oh, it is you, Nelly. This pain is intolerable. Helena, your shawl has slipped down. She wraps up his legs in the shawl. Let me shut the window, Sarah Brakoff. No, leave it open. I am suffocating. I dreamt just now that my left leg belonged to someone else and it hurt so that I woke. I don't believe this is gout. It is more like rheumatism. What time is it, Helena? 12:30. A pause, Sarah Brakoff. I want you to look for Badushka's works in the library tomorrow. I think we have him. Helena, what is that? Sarah Brakoff. Look for Badushka tomorrow morning. We used to have him, I remember. Why do I find it so hard to breathe, Helena? You are tired. This is the second night you have had no sleep. Sarah Brakoff. They say that Turgenev got angina of the heart from gout. I am afraid I am getting angina too. Oh, damn this horrible, accursed, old age. Ever since I have been old, I have been hateful to myself, and I am sure hateful to you all as well. Helena. You speak as if we were to blame for your being old. Sarah Brakoff. I am more hateful to you than to anyone. Helena gets up and walks away from him, sitting down at a distance. Sarah Brakoff. You are quite right, of course. I am not an idiot. I can understand you. You are young and healthy and beautiful and longing for life, and I am an old dotard, almost a dead man already. Don't I know it? Of course I see that it is foolish for me to live so long, but wait, I shall soon set you all free. My life cannot drag on much longer, Helena. You are overtaxing my powers of endurance. Be quiet for God's sake, Sarah Brakoff. It appears that, thanks to me, everybody's power of endurance is being overtaxed. Everybody is miserable, only I am blissfully triumphant. Oh yes, of course, Helena. Be quiet, you are torturing me, Sarah Brakoff. I torture everybody. Of course, Helena. Weeping this is unbearable. Tell me, what is it you want me to do, Sarah Brakoff? Nothing, Helena. Then be quiet, please, Sarah Brakoff. It is funny that everybody listens to Ivan and his old idiot of a mother, but the moment I open my lips, you all begin to feel ill-treated. You can't even stand the sound of my voice. Even if I am hateful, even if I am a selfish tyrant, haven't I the right to be one at my age? Haven't I deserved it? Haven't I ask you, the right to be respected now that I am old, Helena? No one is disputing your rights. The window slams in the wind. The wind is rising. I must shut the window. She shuts it. We shall have rain in a moment. Your rights have never been questioned by anybody. The watchman in the garden sounds his rattle. Sarah Brakoff. I have spent my life working in the interests of learning. I am used to my library and the lecture hall and to the esteem and admiration of my colleagues. Now I suddenly find myself plunged in this wilderness, condemned to see the same stupid people from morning till night and listen to their futile conversation. I want to live. I long for success and fame and the stir of the world, and here I am in exile. Oh, it is dreadful to spend every moment grieving for the lost past, to see the success of others and sit here with nothing to do but to fear death. I cannot stand it. It is more than I can bear. And you will not even forgive me for being old, Helena. Wait, have patience. I shall be old myself in 4 or 5 years. Sonia comes in. Sonia. Father, you sent for Dr. Astroff, and now when he comes, you refuse to see him. It is not nice to give a man so much trouble for nothing. Sarah Brakoff. What do I care about your Astroff? He understands medicine about as well as I understand astronomy, Sonia. We can't send for the whole medical faculty, can we, to treat your gout? Sarah Brakoff. I won't talk to that madman, Sonia. Do as you please. It's all the same to me. She sits down. Sarah Brakoff. What time is it, Helena? 1 o'clock. Sarah Brakoff. It is stifling in here. Sonia, hand me that bottle on the table, Sonia. Here it is. She hands him a bottle of medicine. Sarah Brakoff. Crossley, no, not that one. Can't you understand me? Can't I ask you to do a thing, Sonia? Please don't be captious with me. Some people may like it, but you must spare me if you please, because I don't. Besides, I haven't the time. We're cutting the hay tomorrow and I must get up early. Voitski comes in dressed in a long gown and carrying a candle. Voitski. A thunderstorm is coming up. The lightning flashes. There it is. Go to bed, Helena and Sonia. I have come to take your place. Sarah Brakoff. Frightened, no, don't leave me alone with him, oh, don't. He will begin to lecture me, Voitski, but you must give them a little rest. They have not slept for 2 nights, Sarah Brakoff. Then let them go to bed, but you go away too, thank you. I implore you to go. For the sake of our former friendship, do not protest against going. We will talk some other time. Voitski, our former friendship, our former. Sonia. Hush, Uncle Vanya, Sarah Brakoff. To his wife, my darling, don't leave me alone with him. He will begin to lecture me, Voitski. This is ridiculous. Marina comes in carrying a candle. Sonia, you must go to bed, nurse. It is late, Marina. I haven't cleared away the tea things. Can't go to bed yet, Sarah Brakoff. No one can go to bed. They are all worn out. Only I enjoy perfect happiness. Marina goes up to Sereberakoff and speaks tenderly. What's the matter, master? Does it hurt? My own legs are aching too, oh, so badly. Arranges his shawl about his legs. You have had this illness such a long time. Sonia's dead mother used to stay awake with you too and wear herself out for you. She loved you dearly. A pause. Old people want to be pitied as much as young ones, but nobody cares about them somehow. She kisses Sereberakoff's shoulder. Come, master, let me give you some linden tea and warm your poor feet for you. I shall pray to God for you, Sarah Brakoff. Touched, let us go, Marina, Marina. My own feet are aching so badly, oh so badly. She and Sonia lead Sereberakoff out. Sonia's mother used to wear herself out with sorrow and weeping. You were still little and foolish then, Sonia. Come, come, master. Sarah Brakoff, Sonia, and Marina go out. Helena. I am absolutely exhausted by him and can hardly stand. Voitski. You are exhausted by him, and I am exhausted by my own self. I have not slept for 3 nights. Helena, something is wrong in this house. Your mother hates everything but her pamphlets and the professor. The professor is vexed. He won't trust me and fears you. Sonia is angry with her father and with me and hasn't spoken to me for 2 weeks. I am at the end of my strength and have come near bursting into tears at least 20 times today. Something is wrong in this house, Voitski. Leave speculating alone, Helena. You are cultured and intelligent, Ivan, and you surely understand that the world is not destroyed by villains and conflagrations, but by hate and malice and all this spiteful tattling. It is your duty to make peace and not to growl at everything, Voitski. Help me first to make peace with myself. My darling seizes her hand. Helena, let go. She drags her hand away. Go away, Voitski. Soon the rain will be over and all nature will sigh and awake, refreshed. Only I am not refreshed by the storm. Day and night the thought haunts me like a fiend that my life is lost forever. My past does not count because I frittered it away on trifles and the present has so terribly miscarried. What shall I do with my life and my love? What is to become of them? This wonderful feeling of mine will be wasted and lost as a ray of sunlight is lost that falls into a dark chasm, and my life will go with it. Helena, I am as it were benumbed when you speak to me of your love, and I don't know how to answer you. Forgive me, I have nothing to say to you. She tries to go out. Good night, Voitski. Barring the way, if you only knew how I am tortured by the thought that beside me in this house is another life that is being lost. Forever, it is yours. What are you waiting for? What accursed philosophy stands in your way? Oh, understand, understand. Helena, looking at him intently, Ivan, you are drunk, Voitski. Perhaps, perhaps, Helena, where is the doctor, Voitski? In there, spending the night with me. Perhaps I am drunk. Perhaps I am. Nothing is impossible, Helena. Have you just been drinking together? Why do you do that, Voitski? Because in that way I get a taste of life. Let me do it, Helena, Helena. You never used to drink and you never used to talk so much. Go to bed, I am tired of you, Voitski. Falling on his knees before her, my sweetheart, my beautiful one. Helena, angrily, leave me alone. Really, this has become too disagreeable. Helena goes out. A pause, Voitski alone, she is gone. I met her first 10 years ago at her sister's house when she was 17 and I was 37. Why did I not fall in love with her then and propose to her? It would have been so easy, and now she would have been my wife. Yes, we would both have been waked tonight by the thunderstorm and she would have been frightened, but I would have held her in my arms and whispered, "Don't be afraid, I am here." Oh, enchanting dream, so sweet that I laugh to think of it. He laughs, but my God, my head reels. Why am I so old? Why won't she understand me? I hate all that rhetoric of hers, that morality of indolence, that absurd talk about the destruction of the world. A. Pazzo, how I have been deceived. For years I have worshipped that miserable, gout-ridden professor. Sonia and I have squeezed this estate dry for his sake. We have bartered our butter and curds and peas like misers, and have never kept a morsel for ourselves so that we could scrape enough pennies together to send to him. I was proud of him and of his learning. I received all his words and writings as inspired, and now he has retired, and what is the total of his life? A blank. He is absolutely unknown, and his fame has burst like a soap bubble. I have been deceived. I see that now, basely deceived. Astroff comes in. He has his coat on, but is without his waistcoat or collar and is slightly drunk. Telegin follows him, carrying a guitar. Astroff. Play Telegin. But everyone is asleep. Astroff. Play Telegin begins to play softly. Astroff. Are you alone here? No women about? Sings with his arms akimbo. The hut is cold, the fire is dead, where shall the master lay his head? The thunderstorm woke me. It was a heavy shower. What time is it, Voitski? The devil only knows, Astroff. I thought I heard Helena's voice, Voitski. She was here a moment ago, Astroff. What a beautiful woman. Looking at the medicine bottles on the table, medicine, is it? What a variety we have, prescriptions from Moscow, from Kharkov, from Tula. Why, he has been pestering all the towns of Russia with his gout. Is he ill, or simply shamming, Voitski? He is really ill. Astroff, what is the matter with you tonight? You seem sad. Is it because you are sorry for the professor, Voitski? Leave me alone, Astroff, or in love with the professor's wife, Voitski. She is my friend, Astroff, already, Voitski. What do you mean by already, Astroff? A woman can only become a man's friend after having first been his acquaintance and then his beloved, then she becomes his friend, Voitski. What vulgar philosophy, Astroff. What do you mean? Yes, I must confess I am getting vulgar, but then, you see, I am drunk. I usually only drink like this once a month. At such times, my audacity and temerity know no bounds. I feel capable of anything. I attempt the most difficult operations and do them magnificently. The most brilliant plans for the future take shape in my head. I am no longer a poor fool of a doctor, but mankind's greatest benefactor. I evolve my own system of philosophy, and all of you seem to crawl at my feet like so many insects or microbes. To Telegin, play Waffles Telegin, my dear boy, I would with all my heart, but do listen to reason. Everybody in the house is asleep. Astroff. Play Telegin plays softly. Astroff, I want a drink. Come, we still have some brandy left. And then, as soon as it is day, you will come home with me. He sees Sonia, who comes in at that moment. Astroff, I beg your pardon, I have no collar on. He goes out quickly, followed by Telegin. Sonia, Uncle Vanya, you and the doctor have been drinking. The good fellows have been getting together. It is all very well for him, he has always done it, but why do you follow his example? It looks dreadfully at your age, Voitski. Age has nothing to do with it. When real life is wanting, one must create an illusion. It is better than nothing, Sonia. Our hay is all cut and rotting in these daily rains, and here you are busy creating illusions. You have given up the farm altogether. I have done all the work alone until I am at the end of my strength, frightened. Uncle, your eyes are full of tears, Voitski. Tears? Nonsense, there are no tears in my eyes. You looked at me then just as your dead mother used to, my darling. He eagerly kisses her face and hands. My sister, my dearest sister, where are you now? Ah, if you only knew, if you only knew, Sonia. If she only knew what, Uncle Voitski. My heart is bursting. It is awful. No matter, though. I must go, he goes out. Sonia knocks at the door. Dr. Astroff, are you awake? Please come here for a minute. Astroff, behind the door in a moment. He appears in a few seconds. He has put on his collar and waistcoat. Astroff, what do you want, Sonia? Drink as much as you please yourself if you don't find it revolting, but I implore you not to let my uncle do it. It is bad for him. Astroff, very well, we won't drink any more. I am going home at once. That is settled. It will be dawn by the time the horses are harnessed. Sonia, it is still raining. Wait till morning. Astroff, the storm is blowing over. This is only the edge of it. I must go. And please don't ask me to come and see your father anymore. I tell him he has gout, and he says it is rheumatism. I tell him to lie down, and he sits up. Today he refused to see me at all, Sonia. He has been spoilt. She looks in the sideboard. Won't you have a bite to eat, Astroff? Yes, please. I believe I will, Sonia. I love to eat at night. I am sure we shall find something in here. They say that he has made a great many conquests in his life, and that the women have spoiled him. Here is some cheese for you. They stand eating by the sideboard. Astroff, I haven't eaten anything today. Your father has a very difficult nature. He takes a bottle out of the sideboard. May I? He pours himself a glass of vodka. We are alone here, and I can speak frankly. Do you know I could not stand living in this house for even a month? This atmosphere would stifle me. There's your father entirely, absorbed in his books and his gout. There is your uncle Vanya with his hypochondria, your grandmother, and finally your stepmother. Sonia, what about her Astrof? A human being should be entirely beautiful, the face, the clothes, the mind, the thoughts. Your stepmother is, of course, beautiful to look at, but don't you see? She does nothing but sleep and eat and walk and bewitch us, and that is all. She has no responsibilities, everything is done for her, am I not right? And an idle life can never be a pure one. Pause, however, I may be judging her too severely. Like your uncle Vanya, I am discontented, and so we are both grumblers, Sonia. Aren't you satisfied with life, Astrof? I like life as life, but I hate and despise it in a little. Russian country village, and as far as my own personal life goes, by heaven. There is absolutely no redeeming feature about it. Haven't you noticed if you are riding through a dark wood at night and see a little light shining ahead, how you forget your fatigue and the darkness and the sharp twigs that whip your face? I work that you know as no one else in the country works. Fate beats me on without rest. At times I suffer unendurably and I see no light ahead. I have no hope. I do not like people. It is long since I have loved anyone, Sonia. You love no one, Astrof, not a soul. I only feel a sort of tenderness for your old nurse, for old time's sake. The peasants are all alike. They are stupid and live in dirt, and the educated people are hard to get along with. One gets tired of them. All our good friends are petty and shallow and see no farther than their own noses. In one word, they are dull. Those that have brains are hysterical, devoured with a mania for self-analysis. They whine, they hate, they pick faults everywhere with unhealthy sharpness. They sneak up to me sideways, look at me out of a corner of the eye, and say, "That man is a lunatic. That man is a windbag." Or, if they don't know what else to label me with, they say I am strange. I like the woods, that is strange. I don't eat meat, that is strange too. Simple, natural relations between man and man or man and nature do not exist. He tries to go out, Sonia prevents him. Sonia, I beg you, I implore you not to drink any more, Astrof. Why not, Sonia? It is so unworthy of you. You are well-bred, your voice is sweet. You are even more than anyone I know handsome. Why do you want to resemble the common people that drink and play cards? Oh, don't, I beg you. You always say that people do not create anything, but only destroy what heaven has given them. Why, oh, why do you destroy yourself? Oh, don't, I implore you not to. I entreat you, Astrof. Gives her his hand. I won't drink any more, Sonia. Promise me, Astrof. I give you my word of honor, Sonia. Squeezing his hand, thank you, Astrof. I have done with it. You see, I am perfectly sober again, and so I shall stay till the end of my life. He looks his watch, but as I was saying, life holds nothing for me. My race is run. I am old, I am tired, I am trivial, my sensibilities are dead. I could never attach myself to anyone again. I love no one and never shall. Beauty alone has the power to touch me still. I am deeply moved by it. Helena could turn my head in a day if she wanted to, but that is not love, that is not affection. He shudders and covers his face with his hands. Sonia, what is it, Astrof? Nothing. During Lent, one of my patients died under chloroform, Sonia. It is time to forget that. Pause, tell me, doctor, if I had a friend or a younger sister, and if you knew that she, well, loved you, what would you do, Astrof? Shrugging his shoulders, I don't know. I don't think I should do anything. I should make her understand that I could not return her love. However, my mind is not bothered about those things now. I must start at once if I am ever to get off. Goodbye, my dear girl. At this rate, we shall stand here talking till morning. He shakes hands with her. I shall go out through the sitting room because I am afraid your uncle might detain me. He goes out. Sonia, alone, not a word. His heart and soul are still locked from me, and yet for some reason I am strangely happy. I wonder why, she laughs. With pleasure, I told him that he was well-bred and handsome and that his voice was sweet. Was that a mistake? I can still feel his voice, vibrating in the air. It caresses me. Wringing her hands, oh, how terrible it is to be plain. I am plain, I know it, as I came out of church last Sunday. I overheard a woman say, she is a dear, noble girl, but what a pity she is so ugly. So ugly, Helena comes in and throws open the window. Helena, the storm is over. What delicious air. Pause, where is the doctor, Sonia? He is gone. Pause. Helena, Sonia, Sonia. Yes, Helena. How much longer are you going to sulk at me? We have not hurt each other. Why not be friends? We have had enough of this, Sonia. I myself, she embraces Helena. Let us make peace, Helena, with all my heart. They are both moved. Sonia, has Papa gone to bed, Helena? No, he is sitting up in the drawing room. Heaven knows what reason you and I had for not speaking to each other for weeks. Sees the open sideboard, who left the sideboard open, Sonia. Dr. Astrof has just had supper, Helena. There is some wine. Let us seal our friendship, Sonia. Yes, let us, Helena. out of one glass. She fills a wine glass, so we are friends, are we, Sonia? Yes, they drink and kiss each other I have long wanted to make. Friends, but somehow I was ashamed to, she weeps. Helena, why are you crying, Sonia? I don't know, it is nothing, Helena. There, there, don't cry. She weeps, silly. Now I am crying too. A pause, you are angry with me because I seem to have married your father for his money, but don't believe the gossip you hear. I swear to you I married him for love. I was fascinated by his fame and learning. I know now that it was not real love, but it seemed real at the time. I am innocent, and yet your clever, suspicious eyes have been punishing me for an imaginary crime ever since my marriage, Sonia. Peace, peace. Let us forget the past. Helena, you must not look so at people. It is not becoming to you. You must trust people or life becomes impossible, Sonia. Tell me truly, as a friend, are you happy, Helena? Truly, no, Sonia, I knew it. One more question, do you wish your husband were? Young Helena, what a child you are. Of course I do. Go on, ask something else. Sonia, do you like the doctor, Helena? Yes, very much indeed, Sonia. Laughing, I have a stupid face, haven't I? He has just gone out, and his voice is still in my ears. I hear his step. I see his face in the dark window. Let me say all I have in my heart. But no, I cannot speak of it so loudly. I am ashamed. Come to my room and let me tell you there. I seem foolish to you, don't I? Talk to me of him, Helena. What can I say, Sonia? He is clever. He can do everything. He can cure the sick and plant woods, Helena. It is not a question of medicine and woods, my dear. He is a man of genius. Do you know what that means? It means he is brave, profound, and of clear insight. He plants a tree and his mind travels 1,000 years into the future, and he sees visions of the happiness of the human race. People like him are rare and should be loved. What if he does drink and act roughly at times? A man of genius cannot be a saint in Russia. There he lives, cut off from the world by cold and storm and endless roads of bottomless mud, surrounded by a rough people who are crushed by poverty and disease, his life one continuous struggle with never a day's respite. How can a man live like that for 40 years and keep himself sober and unspotted? Kissing, Sonia, I wish you happiness, with all my heart. You deserve it. She gets up. As for me, I am a worthless, futile woman. I have always been futile in music, in love, in my husband's house, in a word, in everything. When you come to think of it, Sonia, I am really very, very unhappy. Walks excitedly up and down. Happiness can never exist for me in this world. Never. Why do you laugh, Sonia? Laughing and covering her face with her hands, I am so happy, Helena. I want to hear music. I might play a little, Sonia. Oh, do, do. She embraces her. I could not possibly go to sleep. Now, do play, Helena. Yes, I will. Your father is still awake. Music irritates him when he is ill, but if he says I may, then I shall play a little. Go, Sonia, and ask him. Sonia, very well, she goes out. The watchman's rattle is heard in the garden. Helena, it is long since I have heard music. And now I shall sit and play and weep like a fool. Speaking out of the window is that you, rattling out there, FM, voice of the watchman. It is I, Helena. Don't make such a noise. Your master is ill, voice of the watchman. I am going away this minute. Whistles a tune. Sonia comes back. He says no. The curtain falls. ACTIII, the drawing room of SERIBIRIKOFF's house. There are three doors, one to the right, one to the left, and one in the center of the room. VOITSKI and SONIA are sitting down. Helena is walking up and down, absorbed in thought. Voitsky. We were asked by the professor to be here at 1 o'clock. Looks at his watch. It is now 1:45. It seems he has some communication to make to the world. Helena. Probably a matter of business. Voitsky. He never had any business. He writes twaddle, grumbles, and eats his heart out with jealousy. That's all he does. Sonia. Reproachfully. Uncle Voitsky. All right, I beg your pardon. He points to Helena. Look at her. Wandering up and down from sheer idleness. A sweet picture, really, Helena. I wonder you are not bored, droning on in the same key from morning till night. Despairingly, I am dying of this tedium. What shall I do, Sonia? Shrugging her shoulders, there is plenty to do if you would, Helena. For instance, Sonia, you could help run this place, teach the children, care for the sick, isn't that enough? Before you and Papa came, Uncle Vanya and I used to go to market ourselves to deal in flour, Helena. I don't know anything about such things, and besides, they don't interest me. It is only in novels that women go out and teach and heal. The peasants, how can I suddenly begin to do it, Sonia? How can you live here and not do it? Wait a while, you will get used to it all. Embraces her, don't be sad, dearest. Laughing, you feel miserable and restless and can't seem to fit into this life, and your restlessness is catching. Look at Uncle Vanya, he does nothing now, but haunt you like a shadow, and I have left my work today to come here and talk with you. I am getting lazy and don't want to go on with it, doctor. Astroff hardly ever used to come here. It was all we could do to persuade him to visit us once a month, and now he has abandoned his forestry and his practice and comes every day. You must be a witch, Voitski. Why should you languish here? Come, my dearest, my beauty, be sensible. The blood of a Nixie runs in your veins. Oh, won't you let yourself be one? Give your nature the reins for once in your life, fall head over ears in love with some other water sprite and plunge down head, first into a deep pool so that the hair professor and all of us may have our hands free again. Helena. Angrily, leave me alone. How cruel you are. She tries to go out. Voitski. Preventing her there, my beauty, I apologize. He kisses her hand, forgive me, Helena. Confess that you would try the patience of an angel, Voitski. As a peace offering, I am going to fetch some flowers which I picked for you this morning, some autumn roses, beautiful, sorrowful roses. He goes out. Sonya. Autumn roses, beautiful, sorrowful roses. She and Helena stand looking out of the window. Helena. September already. How shall we live through the long winter here? Apause. Where is the doctor, Sonya? He is writing in Uncle Vanya's room. I am glad Uncle Vanya has gone out. I want to talk to you about something, Helena. About what, Sonya? About what? She lays her head on Helena's breast. Helena. Stroking her hair. There, that will do. Don't, Sonya, I am ugly, Helena. You have lovely hair, Sonya. Don't say that. She turns to look at herself in the glass. No, when a woman is ugly, they always say she has beautiful hair or eyes. I have loved him now for 6 years. I have loved him more than one loves one's mother. I seem to hear him beside me every moment of the day. I feel the pressure of his hand on mine. If I look up, I seem to see him coming, and as you see, I run to you to talk of him. He is here every day now, but he never looks at me. He does not notice my presence. It is agony. I have absolutely no hope. No hope. Oh my God, give me strength to endure. I prayed all last night. I often go up to him and speak to him and look into his eyes. My pride is gone. I am not mistress of myself. Yesterday I told Uncle Vanya I couldn't control myself, and all the servants know it. Everyone knows that I love him, Helena. Does he, Sonya? No, he never notices me, Helena. Thoughtfully, he is a strange man. Listen, Sonya, will you allow me to speak to him? I shall be careful, only hint. A pause, really, to be in uncertainty all these years. Let me do it. Sonya nods an affirmative. Helena. Splendid. It will be easy to find out whether he loves you or not. Don't be ashamed, sweetheart. Don't worry. I shall be careful. He will not notice a thing. We only want to find out whether it is yes or no, don't we? A pause. And if it is no, then he must keep away from here. Is that so? Sonya nods. Helena. It will be easier not to see him anymore. We won't put off the examination an instant. He said he had a sketch to show me. Go and tell him at once that I want to see him. Sonya. In great excitement, will you tell me the whole truth, Helena? Of course I will. I am sure that no matter what it is, it will be easier for you to bear than this uncertainty. Trust to me, dearest Sonya. Yes, I shall say that you want to see his sketch. She starts out but stops near the door and looks back. No, it is better not to know, and yet there may be hope, Helena. What do you say, Sonya? Nothing. She goes out. Helena. Alone, there is no greater sorrow than to know another's secret when you cannot help them. In deep thought, he is obviously not in love with her, but why shouldn't he marry her? She is not pretty, but she is. So clever and pure and good, she would make a splendid wife for a country doctor of his years. A pause, I can understand how the poor child feels. She lives here in this desperate loneliness with no one around her except these colorless shadows that go mooning about talking nonsense and knowing nothing except that they eat, drink, and sleep. Among them appears from time to time this Dr. Astroff, so different, so handsome, so interesting, so charming. It is like seeing the moon rise on a dark night. Oh, to surrender oneself to his embrace, to lose oneself in his arms. I am a little in love with him myself. Yes, I am lonely without him, and when I think of him, I smile. That Uncle Vanya says I have the blood of a Nixie in my veins. Give rein to your nature. For once in your life, perhaps it is right that I should. Oh, to be free as a bird, to fly away from all your sleepy faces and your talk and forget that you have existed at all. But I am a coward, I am afraid, my conscience torments me. He comes here every day now. I can guess why, and feel guilty already. I should like to fall on my knees at Sonya's feet and beg her forgiveness and weep. Astroff comes in carrying a portfolio. Astroff. How do you do? Shakes hands with her. Do you want to see my sketch, Helena? Yes, you promised to show me what you had been doing. Have you time now, Astroff? Of course I have. He lays the portfolio on the table, takes out the sketch and fastens it to the table with thumbtacks. Astroff. Where were you born, Helena? Helping him in St. Petersburg, Astroff. And educated, Helena? At the conservatory there, Astroff. You don't find this life very interesting, I dare say, Helena. Oh, why not? It is true I don't know the country very well, but I have read a great deal about it, Astroff. I have my own desk there in Ivan's room. When I am absolutely too exhausted to go on, I drop everything and rush over here to forget myself in this work for an hour or two. Ivan and Miss Sonia sit rattling at their counting boards, the cricket chirps, and I sit beside them and paint, feeling warm and peaceful. But I don't permit myself this luxury, very often, only once a month. Pointing to the picture, look there. That is a map of our country as it was 50 years ago. The green tints, both dark and light, represent forests. Half the map, as you see, is covered with it. Where the green is striped with red, the forests were inhabited by elk and wild goats. Here on this lake lived great flocks of swans and geese and ducks. As the old men say, there was a power of birds of every kind. Now they have vanished like a cloud. Beside the hamlets and villages, you see, I have dotted down here and there the various settlements, farms, hermits' caves, and watermills. This country carried a great many cattle and horses, as you can see by the quantity of blue paint. For instance, see how thickly it lies in this part. There were great herds of them here, an average of 3 horses to every house. A pause now, look lower down. This is the country as it was 25 years ago. Only a third of the map is green now with forests. There are no goats left and no elk. The blue paint is lighter, and so on and so on. Now we come to the third part, our country as it appears today. We still see spots of green, but not much. The elk, the swans, the blackcock have disappeared. It is, on the whole, the picture of a regular and slow decline which it will evidently only take about 10 or 15 more years to complete. You may perhaps object that it is the march of progress, that the old order must give place to the new, and you might be right if roads had been run through these ruined woods, or if factories and schools had taken their place. The people then would have become better educated and healthier and richer, but as it is, we have nothing of the sort. We have the same swamps and mosquitoes, the same disease and want, the typhoid, the diphtheria, the burning villages. We are confronted by the degradation of our country, brought on by the fierce struggle for existence of the human race. It is the consequence of the ignorance and unconsciousness of starving, shivering, sick humanity that, to save its children, instinctively snatches at everything that can warm it and still its hunger. So it destroys everything it can lay its hands on without a thought for the morrow, and almost everything has gone and nothing has been created to take its place. Coldly, but I see by your face that I am not interesting you. Helena, I know so little about such things, Astroff. There is nothing to know. It simply isn't interesting, that's all, Helena. Frankly, my thoughts were elsewhere. Forgive me, I want to submit you to a little examination, but I am embarrassed and don't know how to begin, Astroff, an examination. Helena, yes, but quite an innocent one. Sit down. They sit down, it is about a certain young girl I know. Let us discuss it like honest people, like friends, and then forget what has passed between us, shall we, Astroff? Very well, Helena. It is about my stepdaughter, Sonia. Do you like her, Astroff? Yes, I respect her, Helena. Do you like her as a woman, Astroff? Slowly, no, Helena. One more word, and that will be the last. You have not noticed anything, Astroff? No, nothing, Helena. Taking his hand, you do not love her. I see that in your eyes she is suffering. You must realize that and not come here anymore, Astroff. My son has said yes, and then I haven't the time. Shrugging his shoulders, where shall I find time for such things? He is embarrassed. Helena, bah, what an unpleasant conversation. I am as out of breath as if I had been running 3 miles uphill. Thank heaven, that is over. Now let us forget everything as if nothing had been said. You are sensible. You understand? A pause, I am actually blushing. Astroff. If you had spoken a month ago, I might perhaps have considered it, but now, he shrugs his shoulders, of course, if she is suffering, but I cannot understand why you had to put me through this examination. He searches her face with his eyes and shakes his finger at her. Oh ho, you are wily, Helena. What does this mean, Astroff? Laughing, you are a wily one. I admit that Sonia is suffering, but what does this examination of yours mean? He prevents her from retorting and goes on quickly. Please don't put on such a look of surprise. You know perfectly well why I come here every day. Yes, you know perfectly why and for whose sake I come. Oh, my sweet tigress, don't look at me in that way. I am an old bird, Helena. Perplexed, a tigress? I don't understand you, Astroff. Beautiful, sleek tigress, you must have your victims. For a whole month I have done nothing but seek you eagerly. I have thrown over everything for you, and you love to see it. Now then, I am sure you knew all this without putting me through your examination. Crossing his arms and bowing his head, I surrender. Here you have me now, eat me, Helena. You have gone mad, Astroff. You are afraid, Helena. I am a better and stronger woman than you think me. Goodbye, she tries to leave the room. Astroff, why goodbye? Don't say goodbye, don't waste words. Oh, how lovely you are, what hands. He kisses her hands. Helena, enough of this. She frees her hands, leave the room. You have forgotten yourself, Astroff. Tell me, where can we meet tomorrow? He puts his arm around her. Don't you see that we must meet, that it is inevitable? He kisses her. Voitski comes in carrying a bunch of roses and stops in the doorway. Helena, without seeing Voitski, have pity. Leave me, lays her head on Astroff's shoulder. Don't. She tries to break away from him. Astroff, holding her by the waist, be in the forest tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Will you, Helena? Sees Voitski, let me go, goes to the window deeply, embarrassed. This is appalling. Voitski throws the flowers on a chair and speaks in great excitement, wiping his face with his handkerchief. Nothing, yes, nothing. Astroff, the weather is fine today, my dear Ivan. The morning was overcast and looked like rain, but now the sun is shining again. Honestly, we have had a very fine autumn, and the wheat is looking fairly well. Puts his map back into the portfolio, but the days are growing short. Helena goes quickly up to Voitski. You must do your best. You must use all your power to get my husband and myself away from here today. Do you hear? I say this very day. Voitski, wiping his face. Oh, all right. I saw everything. Helena, in great agitation. Do you hear me? I must leave here this very day. Sarah Brakoff, SONIA, Marina, and Telegin come in. Telegin, I am not very well myself, Your Excellency. I have been limping for 2 days and my head. Sarah Brakoff, where are the others? I hate this house. It is a regular labyrinth. Everyone is always scattered through the 26 enormous rooms. One never can find a soul. Rings, ask my wife and Madame Tskaya to come here. Helena, I am here already. Sarah Brakoff, please, all of you sit down. Sonya goes up to Helena and asks anxiously, what did he say? Helena, I'll tell you later. Sonya, you are moved, looking quickly and inquiringly into her face. I understand. He said he would not come here anymore. A pause, tell me, did he? Helena nods. Sarah Brakoff, to Telegin one can, after all, become reconciled to being an invalid, but not to this country life. The ways of it stick in my throat, and I feel exactly as if I had been whirled off the earth and landed on a strange planet. Please be seated, ladies and gentlemen. Sonya does not hear. She is standing with her head bowed sadly forward on her breast. Sonya, a pause, she does not hear me. To Marina, sit down too, nurse. Marina sits down and begins to knit her stocking. I crave your indulgence, ladies and gentlemen. Hang your ears, if I may say so, on the peg of attention. He laughs. Voitski, agitated, perhaps you do not need me. May I be excused? Sarah Brakoff, no, you are needed now more than anyone. Voitski, what is it you want of me? Sarah Brakoff, you, but what are you angry about? If it is anything I have done, I ask you to forgive me. Voitski, oh, drop that and come to business. What do you want, MME? Voitskya comes in. Sarah Brakoff, here is mother. Ladies and gentlemen, I shall begin. I have asked you to assemble here, my friends, in order to discuss a very important matter. I want to ask you for your assistance and advice, and knowing your unfailing amiability, I think I can count on both. I am a bookworm and a scholar, and am unfamiliar with practical affairs. I cannot, I find, dispense with the help of well-informed people such as you, Ivan, and you, Telegin, and you, mother. The truth is, manet omnis una nox. That is to say, our lives are in the hands of God, and as I am old and ill, I realize that the time has come for me to dispose of my property in regard to the interests of my family. My life is nearly over, and I am not thinking of myself, but I have a young wife and daughter. A pause, I cannot continue to live in the country. We were not made for country life, and yet we cannot afford to live in town on the income derived from this estate. We might sell the woods, but that would be an expedient we could not resort to every year. We must find some means of guaranteeing to ourselves a certain more or less fixed yearly income. With this object in view, a plan has occurred to me, which I now have the honor of presenting to you for your consideration. I shall only give you a rough outline, avoiding all details. Our estate does not pay on an average more than 2% on the money invested in it. I propose to sell it. If we then invest our capital in bonds, it will earn us 4 to 5%, and we should probably have a surplus over of several thousand rubles with which we could buy a summer cottage in Finland. Voitski, hold on, repeat what you just said. I don't think I heard you quite right. Sarah Brakoff, I said we would invest the money in bonds and buy a cottage in Finland with the surplus. Voitski, no, not Finland, you said something else. Sarah Brakoff, I propose to sell this place. Voitski, aha, that was it, so you are going to sell the place? Splendid, the idea is a rich one. And what do you propose to do with my old mother and me and with Sonya here? Sarah Brakoff, that will be decided in due time. We can't do everything at once. Voitski, wait, it is clear that until this moment I have never had a grain of sense in my head. I have always been stupid enough to think that the estate belonged to Sonia. My father bought it as a wedding present for my sister, and I foolishly imagined that as our laws were made for Russians and not Turks, my sister's estate would come down to her child, Sarah Brakoff. Of course it is Sonia's. Has anyone denied it? I don't want to sell it without Sonia's consent. On the contrary, what I am doing is for Sonia's good, Voitsky. This is absolutely incomprehensible. Either I have gone mad or MME. VOITSKAYA. Jean, don't contradict Alexander. Trust to him, he knows. Better than we do what is right and what is wrong, Voitsky. I shan't. Give me some water. He drinks, go ahead, say anything you please, anything, Sarah Brakoff. I can't imagine why you are so upset. I don't pretend that. My scheme is an ideal one, and if you all object to it, I shall not insist. A pause. Telegin. With embarrassment, I not only nourish feelings of respect toward learning, Your Excellency, but I am also drawn to it by family ties. My brother Gregory's wife's brother, whom you may know, his name is Konstantin Lakedemonov, and he used to be a magistrate. Voitsky. Stop waffles. This is business. Wait a bit. We will talk of that later. To Serebrakoff, there now ask him what he thinks. This estate was bought from his uncle, Sarah Brakoff. Ah, why should I ask questions? What good would it do, Voitsky? The price was 95,000 rubles. My father paid 70 and left a debt of 25. Now listen, this place could never have been bought had I not renounced my inheritance in favor of my sister, whom I deeply loved, and what is more, I worked for 10 years like an ox and paid off the debt, Sarah Brakoff. I regret ever having started this conversation, Voitsky. Thanks entirely to my own personal efforts, the place is entirely clear of debts, and now, when I have grown old, you throw me out neck and crop, Sarah Brakoff. I can't imagine what you are driving at, Voitsky. For 25 years, I have managed this place and have sent you the returns from it like the most honest of servants, and you have never given me one single word of thanks for my work, not one neither, in my youth nor now. You allowed me a meager salary of 500 rubles a year, a beggar's pittance, and have never even thought of adding a ruble to it, Sarah Brakoff. What did I know about such things, Ivan? I am not a practical man and don't understand them. You might have helped yourself to all you wanted, Voitsky. Yes, why did I not steal? Don't you all despise me for not stealing when it would have been only justice, and I should not now have been a beggar, MME. VOITSKAYA. Sternly, Jean Telegin. Agitated Vanya, old man, don't talk in that way. Why spoil such pleasant relations? He embraces him. Do stop, Voitsky. For 25 years, I have been sitting here with my mother, like a mole in a burrow. Our every thought and hope was yours and yours only. By day we talked with pride of you and your work and spoke your name with veneration. Our nights we wasted reading the books and papers, which my soul now loathes, Telegin. Don't, Vanya, don't. I can't stand it, Sarah Brakoff. Wrathfully, what under heaven do you want, anyway, Voitsky? We used to think of you as almost superhuman, but now the scales have fallen from my eyes and I see you as you are. You write on art without knowing anything about it. Those books of yours which I used to admire are not worth one copper kopeck. You are a hoax, Sarah Brakoff. Can anyone make him stop? I am going, Helena. Ivan, I command you to stop this instant. Do you hear me, Voitsky? I refuse. Sarah Brakoff tries to get out of the room, but Voitsky bars the door. Wait, I have not done yet. You have wrecked my life. I have never lived. My best years have gone for nothing, have been ruined thanks to you. You are my most bitter enemy, Telegin. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I am going. He goes out in great excitement. Sarah Brakoff, but what do you want? What earthly right have you to use such language to me? Ruination. If this estate is yours, then take it, and let me be ruined, Helena. I am going away out of this hell this minute. Shrieks, this is too much, Voitsky. My life has been a failure. I am clever and brave and strong. If I had lived a normal life, I might have become another Schopenhauer or Dostoevsky. I am losing my head. I am going crazy. Mother, I am in despair. Oh, mother, MME. VOITSKAYA. Sternly, listen, Alexander. Sonia falls on her knees beside the nurse and nestles against her. Sonia. Oh, nurse, nurse Voitsky. Mother, what shall I do? But no, don't speak. I know what to do. To Serebrakoff, and you will understand me. He goes out through the door in the center of the room, and MME, Voitskaya, follows him. Sarah Brakoff. Tell me, what on earth is the matter? Take this lunatic out of my sight. I cannot possibly live under the same roof with him. His room, he points to the center door, is almost next door to mine. Let him take himself off into the village or into the wing of the house, or I shall leave here at once. I cannot stay in the same house with him, Helena. To her husband, we are leaving today. We must get ready at once for our departure, Sarah Brakoff. What a perfectly dreadful man, Sonia. On her knees beside the nurse and turning to her father. She speaks with emotion. You must be kind to us, Papa. Uncle Vanya and I are so unhappy. Controlling her despair, have pity on us. Remember how? Uncle Vanya and Granny used to copy and translate your books for you. Every night. Uncle Vanya has toiled without rest. He would never spend a penny on us. We sent it all to you. We have not eaten the bread of idleness. I am not saying this as I should like to, but you must understand us, Papa. You must be merciful to us. Helena. Very excited to her husband. For heaven's sake, Alexander, go and have a talk with him. Explain. Sarah Brakoff. Very well, I shall have a talk with him, but I won't apologize for a thing. I am not angry with him, but you must confess that his behavior has been strange, to say the least. Excuse me, I shall go to him. He goes out through the center door. Helena, be gentle with him, try to quiet him. She follows him out. Sonia, nestling nearer to Marina, nurse, oh nurse Marina, it's all right, my baby. When the geese have cackled, they will be still again. First they cackle and then they stop, Sonia. Nurse Marina, you are trembling all over as if you were freezing. There, little orphan baby, God is merciful, a little linden tea and it will all pass away. Don't cry, my sweetest. Looking angrily at the door, in the center of the room, see, the geese have all gone now. The devil take them, a shot is heard. Helena screams behind the scenes. Sonia shudders, Marina. Bang, what's that, Sarah Brakoff? Comes in reeling with terror, hold him, he has gone mad. Helena and Voitski are seen struggling in the doorway, Helena. Trying to wrest the revolver from him, give it to me, I tell you, Voitski. Let me go, Helena, let me go. He frees himself and rushes in, looking everywhere for Sarebrakoff. Where is he? Ah, there he is, he shoots at him. A pause, I didn't get him. I missed again, furiously. Damnation. To hell with him, he flings the revolver on the floor and drops helpless into a chair. Sarah Brakoff stands as if stupefied. Helena leans against the wall, almost fainting. Helena, take me away, I can't stay here, I can't, Voitski. In despair, oh, what shall I do, Sonia? Softly, oh, nurse, the curtain falls, act IV, Voitski's bedroom, which is also his office. A table stands near the window, on it are ledgers, letter scales, and papers of every description. Nearby stands a smaller table belonging to ASDROFF with his paints and drawing materials. On the wall hangs a cage containing a starling. There is also a map of Africa on the wall, obviously of no use to anybody. There is a large sofa covered with buckram. A door to the left leads into an inner room, one to the right leads into the front hall, and before this door lies a mat for the peasants with their muddy boots to stand on. It is an autumn evening. The silence is profound. Telegin and Marina are sitting facing one another, winding wool, Telegin. Be quick, Marina, or we shall be called away to say goodbye before you have finished. The carriage has already been ordered, Marina, trying to wind more quickly, I am a little tired, Telegin. They are going to Kharkov to live, Marina. They do well to go, Telegin. They have been frightened. The professor's wife won't stay here an hour longer. If we are going at all, let's be off, says she. We shall go to Kharkov and look about us, and then we can send for our things. They are traveling light. It seems, Marina, that fate has decreed for them not to live here, Marina, and quite rightly. What a storm they have just raised. It was shameful, Telegin, it was indeed. The scene was worthy of the brush of A. Bazovsky, Marina. I wish I'd never laid eyes on them. A pause, now we shall have things as they were again. Tea at 8, dinner at 1, and supper in the evening. Everything in order as decent folks, as Christians like to have it. Sighs, it is a long time since I have eaten noodles, Telegin. Yes, we haven't had noodles for ages. A pause, not for ages. As I was going through the village this morning, Marina, one of the shopkeepers called after me. Hi, you hanger on. I felt it bitterly, Marina. Don't pay the least attention to them, master. We are all dependents on God. You and Sonia and all of us. Everyone must work, no, one can sit idle. Where is Sonia Telegin? In the garden with the doctor, looking for Ivan. They fear he may lay violent hands on himself. Marina. Where is his pistol, Telegin? Whispers, I hid it in the cellar. Voitski and ASDROFF come in. Voitski. Leave me alone. To Marina and Telegin, go away. Go away and leave me to myself, if but for an hour. I won't have you watching me like this, Telegin. Yes, Vanya. He goes out on tiptoe. Marina. The gander cackles. Ho, ho, ho. She gathers up her wool and goes out. Voitski. Leave me by myself, Astrov. I would, with the greatest pleasure. I ought to have gone long ago, but I shan't leave you until you have returned what you took from me, Voitski. I took nothing from you, Astrov. I am not jesting, don't detain me, I really must go, Voitski. I took nothing of yours, Astrov. You didn't? Very well, I shall have to wait a little longer, and then you will have to forgive me if I resort to force. We shall have to bind you and search you. I mean what I say, Voitski. Do as you please. A pazzo to make such a fool of myself, to shoot twice and miss him both times. I shall never forgive myself, Astroff. When the impulse came to shoot, it would have been as well had you put a bullet through your own head, Voitski. Shrugging his shoulders, strange, I attempted murder and am not going to be arrested or brought to trial. That means they think me mad. With a bitter laugh, me, I am mad, and those who hide there. Worthlessness, their dullness, their crying heartlessness behind a professor's mask are sane. Those who marry old men and then deceive them under the noses of all are sane. I saw you kiss her. I saw you in each other's arms, Astroff. Yes, sir, I did kiss her, so there. He puts his thumb to his nose. Voitski. His eyes on the door. No, it is the earth that is mad because she still bears us on her breast, Astroff. That is nonsense, Voitski. Well, am I not a madman and therefore irresponsible? Haven't I the right to talk nonsense, Astroff? This is a farce. You are not mad, you are simply a ridiculous fool. I used to think every fool was out of his senses, but now I see. That lack of sense is a man's normal state, and you are perfectly normal, Voitski. Covers his face with his hands. Oh, if you knew how ashamed I am, these piercing pangs of shame are like nothing on earth. In an agonized voice, I can't endure them. He leans against the table. What can I do? What can I do, Astroff? Nothing, Voitski. You must tell me something. Oh my God, I am 47 years old. I may live to 60. I still have 13 years before me. An eternity. How shall I be able to endure life for 13 years? What shall I do? How can I fill them? Oh, don't you see? He presses Astroff's hand convulsively. Don't you see? If only I could live the rest of my life in some new way, if I could only wake some still, bright morning and feel that life had begun again, that the past was forgotten and had vanished like smoke. He weeps. Oh, to begin life anew. Tell me. Tell me how to begin, Astroff. Crossly, what nonsense. What sort of a new life can you and I look forward to? We can have no hope, Voitski. None, Astroff, none. Of that I am convinced, Voitski. Tell me what to do. He puts his hand to his heart. I feel such a burning pain here, Astroff. Shouts angrily, stop. Then, more gently it may be that posterity, which will despise us for our blind and stupid lives, will find some road to happiness, but we, you and I, have but one. Hope, the hope that we may be visited by visions, perhaps by pleasant ones, as we lie resting in our graves. Sighing, yes, brother, there. We're only two respectable, intelligent men in this county, you and I. 10 years or so of this life of ours, this miserable life, have sucked us under, and we have become as contemptible and petty as the rest. But don't try to talk me out of my purpose. Give me what you took from me, will you, Voitski? I took nothing from you, Astroff. You took a little bottle of morphine out of my medicine case. A pause, listen, if you are positively determined to make an end to yourself, go into the woods and shoot yourself there. Give up the morphine, or there will be a lot of talk and guesswork. People will think I gave it to you. I don't fancy having to perform a post-mortem on you. Do you think I should find it interesting? Sonya comes in, Voitski. Leave me alone, Astroff. To Sonya, Sonya, your uncle has stolen a bottle of morphine out of my medicine case and won't give it up. Tell him that his behavior is, well, unwise. I haven't time. I must be going, Sonya. Uncle Vanya, did you take the morphine, Astroff? Yes, he took it. A pause, I am absolutely sure, Sonya. Give it up. Why do you want to frighten us? Tenderly, give it up, Uncle Vanya. My misfortune is perhaps even greater than yours, but I am not plunged in despair. I endure my sorrow and shall endure it until my life comes to a natural end. You must endure yours, too. A pause, give it up, dear, darling Uncle Vanya. Give it up, she weeps, you are. So good, I am sure you will have pity on us and give it up. You must endure your sorrow, Uncle Vanya, you must endure it. Voitski takes a bottle from the drawer of the table and hands it to Astroff, Voitski. There it is. To Sonia, and now we must get to work at once. We must do something, or else I shall not be able to endure it, Sonya. Yes, yes, to work. As soon as we have seen them off, we shall go to work. She nervously straightens out the papers on the table. Everything is in a muddle. Astroff, putting the bottle in his case, which he straps together now. I can be off. Helena comes in. Helena. Are you here, Ivan? We are starting in a moment. Go to Alexander. He wants to speak to you, Sonya. Go, Uncle Vanya. She takes Voitski's arm. Come, you and Papa must make peace. That is absolutely necessary. Sonya and Voitski go out. Helena, I am going away. She gives Astroff her hand. Goodbye, Astroff. So soon, Helena. The carriage is waiting. Astroff. Goodbye, Helena. You promised me you would go away yourself today. Astroff. I have not forgotten. I am going at once. A pause. Were you frightened? Was it so terrible, Helena? Yes, Astroff. Couldn't you stay? Couldn't you? Tomorrow in the forest, Helena, no, it is all settled, and that is why I can look you so bravely in the face. Our departure is fixed. One thing I must ask of you, don't think too badly of me. I should like you to respect me, Astroff. With an impatient gesture, stay, I implore you, confess that there is nothing for you to do in this world. You have no object in life, there is nothing to occupy your attention, and sooner or later your feelings must master you. It is inevitable. It would be better if it happened not in Kharkov or in Kursk, but here in nature's lap. It would then at least be poetical, even beautiful. Here you have the forests, the houses half in ruins that Turgenev writes of Helena. How comical you are. I am angry with you, and yet I shall always remember you with pleasure. You are interesting and original. You and I will never meet again, and so I shall tell you, why should I conceal it, that I am just a little in love with you. Come, one more last pressure of our hands, and then let us part good friends. Let us not bear each other any ill will, Astroff. Pressing her hand, yes, go. Thoughtfully you seem to be, sincere and good, and yet there is something strangely disquieting about all your personality. No sooner did you arrive here with your husband, than everyone whom you found busy and actively creating something was forced to drop his work and give himself up for the whole summer to your husband's gout and yourself. You and he have infected us with your idleness. I have been swept off my feet. I have not put my hand to a thing for weeks, during which sickness has been running its course, unchecked among the people, and the peasants have been pasturing there. Cattle in my woods and young plantations. Go where you will, you and your husband will always carry destruction in your train. I am joking, of course, and yet I am strangely sure that had you stayed here we should have been overtaken by the most immense desolation. I would have gone to my ruin, and you would not have prospered. So go, e finita la commedia Helena. Snatching a pencil off Astroff's table and hiding it with a quick movement, I shall take this pencil for memory, Astroff. How strange it is. We meet, and then suddenly it seems that we must part forever. That is the way in this world. As long as we are alone before Uncle Vanya comes in with a bouquet, allow me to kiss you goodbye, may I? He kisses her on the cheek, so splendid, Helena. I wish you every happiness. She glances about her for once in my life I shall, and scorn the consequences. She kisses him, impetuously, and they quickly part. I must go, Astroff. Yes, go. If the carriage is there, then start at once. They stand listening. Astroff, Ifanita Voitsky, Seribirikoff, MME. Voitskaya with her book, TELEGIN and SONIA, come in, Sarah Brakoff, to Voitsky, shame on him who bears malice for the past. I have gone through so much in the last few hours that I feel capable of writing a whole treatise on the conduct of life for the instruction of posterity. I gladly accept your apology and myself ask your forgiveness. He kisses Voitski three times. Helena embraces SONIA, Sarah Brakoff, kissing MME. Voitski's hand, mother MME. Voitski, kissing him, have your picture taken, Alexander, and send me one. You know how dear you are to me, Telegin. Goodbye, Your Excellency, don't forget us, Sarah Brakoff, kissing his daughter goodbye, goodbye all. Shaking, hands with Astroff, many thanks for your pleasant company, I have a deep regard for your opinions and your enthusiasm, but let me, as an old man, give one word of advice at parting. Do something, my friend. Work. Do something. They all bow. Good luck to you all. He goes out, followed by MME. Voitskaya and SONIA. Voitsky kissing Helena's hand fervently. Goodbye, forgive me. I shall never see you again, Helena. Touched, goodbye, dear boy. She lightly kisses his head as he bends over her hand and goes out. Astroff. Tell them to bring my carriage around two waffles, Telegin. All right, old man. Astroff and Voitski are left behind alone. Astroff collects his paints and drawing materials on the table and packs them away in a box. Astroff, why don't you go to see them off, Voitski? Let them go, I can't go out there. I feel too sad. I must go to work on something at once. To work, he rummages through his papers on the table. A pause, the tinkling of bells is heard as the horses trot away. Astroff, they have gone. The professor, I suppose, is glad to go. He couldn't be tempted back now by a fortune. Marina comes in. Marina, they have gone. She sits down in an armchair and knits her stocking. Sonia comes in wiping her eyes. Sonia, they have gone. God be with them. To her uncle and now Uncle Vanya, let us do something, Voitsky. To work, Sonia. It is long, long since you and I have sat together at this table. She lights a lamp on the table. No ink. She takes the inkstand to the cupboard and fills it from an ink bottle. How sad it is to see them go, MME. Voitskaya comes slowly in, MME. Voitskaya. They have gone. She sits down and at once becomes absorbed in her book. SONIA sits down at the table and looks through an account book. SONIA, first Uncle Vanya, let us write up the accounts. They are in a dreadful state. Come begin, you take one and I will take the other, Voitsky. In account with they sit silently writing. Marina, Yawning, the Sandman has come. Astroff, how still it is. Their pens scratch, the cricket sings. It is so warm and comfortable, I hate to go. The tinkling of bells is heard. Astroff, my carriage has come. There now remains but to say goodbye to you, my friends, and to my table here, and then away. He puts the map into the portfolio. Marina, don't hurry away, sit a little longer with us, Astroff. Impossible, Voitsky. Writing and carry forward from the old debt 275. Workman comes in, workman. Your carriage is waiting, sir, Astroff, all right. He hands the workman his medicine case, portfolio, and box. Look out, don't crush the portfolio, workman. Very well, sir, Sonya. When shall we see you again, Astroff? Hardly before next summer. Probably not this winter, though. Of course, if anything should happen, you will let me know. He shakes hands with them. Thank you for your kindness, for your hospitality, for everything. He goes up to Marina and kisses her head. Goodbye, old nurse, Marina. Are you going without your tea, Astroff? I don't want any, nurse, Marina. Won't you have a drop of vodka, Astroff? Hesitatingly, yes, I might. Marina goes out. Astroff. After a pause, my off-wheeler has gone lame for some reason. I noticed it yesterday when Peter was taking him to water, Voitsky. You should have him reshod, Astroff. I shall have to go around by the blacksmith's on my way home. It can't be avoided. He stands looking up at the map of Africa hanging on the wall. I suppose it is roasting hot in Africa now, Voitsky. Yes, I suppose it is. Marina comes back carrying a tray on which are a glass of vodka and a piece of bread. Marina, help yourself. Astroff drinks. Marina, to your good health. She bows deeply. Eat your bread with it, Astroff. No, I like it so. And now goodbye to Marina. You needn't come out to see me off, nurse. He goes out. Sonia follows him with a candle to light him to the carriage. Marina sits down in her armchair, Voitsky. Writing on the 2D of February, 20 pounds of butter. On the 16th, 20 pounds of butter again. Buckwheat flour, a pause, bells are heard tinkling. Marina, he is gone. A pause. Sonia comes in and sets the candlestick on the table. Sonia, he is gone, Voitsky. Adding and writing, total 15:25. Sonia sits down and begins to write, yawning. Oh ho, the Lord have mercy. Telegin comes in on tiptoe, sits down near the door, and begins to tune his guitar, Voitsky. To Sonia, stroking her hair, oh my child, I am miserable. If you only knew how miserable I am, Sonia. What can we do? We must live our lives. A pause, yes, we shall. Live, Uncle Vanya. We shall live through the long procession of days before us, and through the long evenings, we shall patiently bear the trials that fate imposes on us. We shall work for others without rest, both now and when we are old, and when our last hour comes, we shall meet it humbly, and there, beyond the grave, we shall say that we have suffered and wept, that our life was bitter, and God will have pity on us. Ah, then, dear, dear uncle, we shall see that bright and beautiful life. We shall rejoice and look back upon our sorrow here, a tender smile, and we shall rest. I have faith, uncle, fervent, passionate faith. Sonia kneels down before her uncle and lays her head on his hands. She speaks in a weary voice, we shall rest. Telegin plays softly on the guitar, we shall rest. We shall hear the angels. We shall see heaven shining like a jewel. We shall see all evil and all our pain sink away in the great compassion that shall enfold the world. Our life will be as peaceful and tender and sweet as a caress. I have faith, I have faith. She wipes away her tears. My poor, poor Uncle Vanya, you are crying. Weeping, you have never known what happiness was, but wait, Uncle Vanya, wait, we shall rest. She embraces him, we shall rest. The watchman's rattle is heard in the garden. Telegin plays softly. MME. Voitskaya writes something on the margin of her pamphlet. Marina knits her stocking. We shall rest. The curtain slowly falls. End of the project. GUTEMBRGEBOOK Uncle VANYA. SCNES from Country Life in 4X asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away you may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTM-BRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1E1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to a work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7, or obtain permission for the use of the work and the project Gutenberg, trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual project Gutenberg electronic work is posted, with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense, to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to, viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9. 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about donations to the project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in Section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as but not limited to incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1. F2. Limited warranty, disclaimer of DAMAGES, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the project. Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the project. Gutenberg Trademark, trademark, and any other party distributing a project. Gutenberg Trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you received the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you received the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur. A, distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work. B, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work. And C, any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the State of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or federal tax identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax-deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Wachung Plaza 516. Montclair NJ 7042, USA, +1 862 621 9288. Email contact links and up. To date contact information can be found at the foundation's website, an official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact, section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.